tonight then at these verses 11 to 25. And the theme is this: how Moses reacted, how God reacted to the oppression of the Israelites. How Moses reacted in an imperfect manner, but nevertheless he did react. How Moses reacted to the oppression of the Israelites. Then we see how God reacts to the oppression of his people. Just 2 points. The first one, the reaction of Moses. The reaction of Moses. Verses 11 to 22. I want to break this down into 3 parts. First of all, they all begin with the letter R. Help you to remember, perhaps. First of all, his reaction to the cruel Egyptian. His reaction to the cruelty of the Egyptian. Verses 11 and 12. There's something very significant here, even in this opening verse, in relation to Moses' attitude. Look at verse 11. One day, after Moses had grown up, he went out to where his own people were and watched them at their hard labor. You remember that though Moses was born to Hebrew parents, he had been rescued from the water by the Egyptian princess, and he was brought up in the Egyptian court. But that did not mean that he lost concern for his own people. That when he grew up, he had no interest in what was happening to them. That was not the case at all. Even here in verse 11, we see him looking on at how oppressed his people are. He's concerned about it. He's moved by it. And leads him then to take action. See how he reacts to the cruel Egyptian who is beating a Hebrew. Very severely, no doubt. He saw an Egyptian beating a Hebrew, one of his own people. And what do you make of Moses' reaction to the cruel Egyptian? What do you make of verse 12? How do you evaluate Moses' reaction? We read, glancing this way and that, and seeing no one, he killed the Egyptian and hid him in the sand. What do you make of this? Is this justifiable behavior on Moses' part? Here is a killing. Here is a killing. And of course the Word of God tells us, doesn't it, in so many places, you shall not kill. And the killing is a very, very serious thing in the sight of God, the God of life, the God who gives us life. It's never to be taken lightly, the killing of any human being. Just as we're emphasizing in these days, that the killing of the unborn is not to be taken lightly. We're to be appalled by it. Many commentators indeed have condemned Moses for this action. What do you think? Well, there's no explicit condemnation of Moses in the text of Scripture here. We don't read, do we, it being explicitly said that this displeased the Lord. There is no statement here in this passage, or indeed in any other part of the Scriptures, saying that Moses is to be condemned for this. In fact, there are some who would justify this behavior entirely, that would see Moses' reaction as entirely justifiable. One commentator puts it a bit like this. Put yourself in Moses' sandals for a moment. You see this Egyptian severely beating your fellow Israelite. What would you do? What would you do? Would you just come up to the fellow who's beating your fellow Israelite and say, now, that's not very nice, you Egyptian taskmaster. That's not a nice way to treat anyone. Would you please stop? Don't think the Egyptian would have answered to that or responded to that. Or maybe Moses, you might think, would just say to the fellow who's been beaten, "Oh, I'm so sorry. I'm so sorry, but I can't do anything about this. But I'm sorry you're being treated this way. I hope you survive it and you don't get too badly beaten." Clearly here Moses feels very strongly about this. Feels very strongly about the oppression of his fellow Israelite. And actually if you read that passage in the book of Acts in chapter 7 and note the wording of it, describes him avenging his brother. So some commentators would go all the way and they would say, far from condemning Moses, we should see this as an entirely righteous and just response and reaction on Moses' part. I'm not so sure we can go that far. But we can say at least two things here in defense of Moses. There is a theme running through this chapter, and it's important for us to place this incident in line with two other incidents that are going to occur in the chapter that we'll be looking at. For they have one thing in common: how Moses here responds to the Egyptian, how he responds to the two Hebrews who are fighting, and later on, how he responds to the girls who have been chased away from the well by the shepherds. In each of these three cases, Moses has a sense of justice, concern for the people who are being oppressed and treated badly. And that's a very important thing. For later on, Moses is going to be called, isn't he, by God, to be the leader of the Lord's oppressed people, to administer justice to them, and by be used by the Lord to rescue his people from terrible oppression in Egypt. So there's a theme there that's been emphasized. But also, more than that, is there not also here that we can see that Moses is definitely identifying himself with his own people? Listen to Hebrews 11, 24 and 25, which casts light on this passage. By faith Moses, when he became of age, that ties in, I think, with verse 11, doesn't it? One day after Moses had grown up, you see the parallel? One day after Moses had grown up, Exodus 2:11, Hebrews 11, 24, 25, by faith Moses, when he became of age, what does it say? Refused to be called the son of Pharaoh's daughter. Was prepared to risk all the privileges and pleasures of Egyptian palace life out of concern for his people, for the Lord's people, for his own people. So in that regard, we can also see here an important aspect in the life of Moses. By faith, Moses, when he became of age, identified with the struggles of his own people. His reaction to the cruel Egyptian, one would be slow to defend the killing of any human being, but nevertheless, there is evidence here of Moses' his concern for the oppressed and his identification with his own people. The second thing we see here is Moses being rejected by his own people. Moses being rejected by his own people. Have a look at the second incident here. And it happens just the very next day. What does Moses see? On this occasion he sees two of his own people fighting. And again he intervenes. And note on whose behalf he intervenes. He asks the one in the wrong. Moses here notes that there's one in the wrong. Why are you thin, your fellow Hebrew? Or why are you thin, your brother? Can't you see again? Here is Moses' concern for one who has been mistreated and being oppressed. So he rebukes, as it were, or challenges the one who is in the wrong. And he says to him, why are you hitting your fellow Hebrew? How is Moses' intervention received on this occasion? Well, he gets a very abrupt answer, doesn't he? In no uncertain terms, the one in the wrong answers in verse 14. Who made you a ruler and judge over us? Who gives you the right to interfere? Who do you think you are? What authority have you to determine the rights and wrongs of this situation? And more than that, Moses gets quite a shock because he thinks that he has managed to cover over his killing of the Egyptian, but then this man says to him, are you thinking of killing me as you killed the Egyptian? Acts 7 verse 25 again casts light on this. For there Stephen records, Moses thought that his own people would realize that God was using him to rescue them. But they did not. They did not at this time recognize that Moses was wanting to rescue them. There seems to have been some outlook on Moses' heart at this point that he should seek to rescue his people. But he is rejected here by his people, by this particular individual. His rejection by his own people. Things are not going smoothly for Moses, because this person's response also alerts him to the danger that he is in. Verse 14, then Moses was afraid and thought, what I did must have become known. In fact, it turns out that very shortly Pharaoh was out to kill Moses. So we see the reaction of Moses to the Egyptian, the rejection of Moses by his own people, and then thirdly, his refuge in the land of Midian. His refuge in the land of Midian. The map there shows where he had to go, where he had to flee as a refugee. He couldn't stay in Egypt. Pharaoh was out to get him. A number of things one can point out about this section from verse 15 to verse 22. Three things. See again the oppression that Moses responds to and reacts to. The oppression that Moses responds to. Look at how he defends the girls who are seeking to get water from the well. They're being oppressed, aren't they, or chased away by the shepherds. And Moses, as they themselves say, rescues them. Interesting word there. Somebody said there's a little microcosm of what's going to happen later. A tiny expression of what's going to happen later on a much greater scale. That here Moses rescues the servant girls from oppression. Later on he'll be used by the Lord, it's the same Hebrew word, to rescue and deliver his people on a much grander scale. You see again here, Moses says, this is not right. This is not fair that these girls are being driven away from the well and not being allowed to water their flocks. So he intervenes on their behalf. That's not the only thing that happens during his refuge in Midian. The second thing is the family he was provided with. Things don't look to be going well for Moses, do they, whenever he has to flee from Egypt? He's a refugee. He's on the run. And yet in the gracious providence of God, he happens to come across this family, the family of Reuel, or as he's later called, Jethro. And he's brought into Jethro's household. And he's even provided with a wife by Jethro. Here we see something of the provision and the kindness of the Lord watching over Moses, the refugee who's had to flee, and providing him with this family circle. And the third thing you can note about these verses is this, the exile that Moses experienced. How long did this go on for? How long did Moses have to spend away from the people of Israel who were in Egypt? How long did he have to spend in this desert refuge? Was it a few months? Was it a few years? No, it's apparent that it was actually 40 years. That's a long, long, long time, isn't it? It's a long time to have to flee away from your own people. It's interesting, isn't it, and striking the name that Moses gives to one of his children. What's the name? Look at verse 22. Zipporah gave birth to a son, and Moses named him Gershom. And many biblical names are popular. I don't think this one, I've never heard of a Gershom. Maybe they'll start a trend. But you see the meaning of the name. It's significant, as so many names are in the Old Testament. The name Gershom sounds like the Hebrew for an alien there. Isn't that interesting and striking? That Moses should call the name of his son by this name, signifying that Moses is an alien, a refugee, an exile in the land of Midian. That he has this sense of being away from where he really should be. But he's not among his people. He's in this desert refuge. And he senses that and he experiences that. And he may well struggle with it. It's not spelled out in such detail, but there may be an implication here that this wasn't easy for Moses. 40 years. Not where he wanted to really be. He had to flee there. He had to take refuge there. Some commentators even take a deeper significance from the phraseology here of this child's name. I become an alien in a foreign land. Referring to the book of Moses about how the patriarchs and the champions of Israel, the great men of the faith, saw themselves as aliens and strangers on the earth and were looking to a better land, an enduring city. That there may be some implication of that here. But how do we sum up this first thing, this first point about the reaction of Moses? Well, I think this may be the one lesson in a way. That God can overrule our setbacks, and if you interpret in a certain way, our serious mistakes, as Moses certainly experienced a setback, and made a serious mistake perhaps, that God can overrule these over the length of time and the unfolding of time for the ultimate fulfillment of his purposes. Because actually, it was significant that Moses here had to take refuge in Midian. You know why? Later on, he will lead the people of God through this wilderness and through this desert. Here there's an element of preparation for Moses, though he would not have known it at the time. An element of divine preparation for the mission that Moses will later undertake to lead his people through the land of Midian. 40 years is a long time, isn't it? The story is told to illustrate this point that we can't always judge what happens to us in the shorter term. That we, as human beings, our insight is limited. And this story is meant to illustrate it. It may be, I think, a legend. I'm not sure if it's a true story. It may be one of these legends that's often told. But it's from the land of China and a farmer, a Chinese farmer. And this Chinese farmer apparently had a tremendous horse. Now, farmers today mightn't get too excited with your tractors and all your fine machinery. But in those days, for a farmer to have a really fine horse, he was doing well. And after some time, his neighbours came to him and said, "Oh, farmer, our neighbour, isn't this good? Isn't everything working out well for you, that you've been given such a fine horse?" The Chinese farmer thought for a moment, and he said, "Whether it's good or whether it's bad, time will tell." That was his response. He wasn't sure. And he said, "Time will tell. Let's give it time. Is it really going to be a good thing for me that I have this fine horse?" Well, a period of time passes. And then a particular day, doesn't the horse go missing and gets lost in the hills somewhere? And the farmer cannot find that fine horse. So then the neighbours come to him on this occasion and they say to this Chinese farmer, "Well, haven't things turned out really badly for you now? This fine horse that you had to work your farm, it's gone. You're deprived of it. Haven't really things turned badly against you?" And the Chinese farmer responded on this occasion once more,
whether it's good or bad,
time will tell. Well, and another period of time passes, several years. And then one day, all of a sudden, amazingly, the fine horse comes back to the farm. And not on its own. It brings back with it a dozen wild horses. So the farmer now not only has his fine horse, he's able to corral these wild horses, and he now has 13 horses that he could use to work his farm. I know it's a long story, but you'll get the point in a while. Along come his neighbours again, and they say, "Farmer, haven't things now gone really well for you? Haven't they? Now you have 13 horses, you have your own horseback." The Chinese farmer says once again, "Whether this is for good or ill, time will tell." Well, then another period of time passes, and the farmer's son decides he's going to really tame one of these horses to turn it into a really useful farm animal. And so the farmer's son gets up on the wild horse, and he seeks to tame it, but he falls off, and he injures himself really badly, so that he is limping and lame for the rest of his days. And the neighbours come along and say, "Haven't things turned out really, really badly? Look what's happened." The old Chinese farmer says, "Whether this is for good or ill, I do not know, but time will tell." Now we're coming to the last stage. But finally, a war breaks out, and the Chinese emperor orders that all of the young men in that village must go out to war. And so they all go out with the exception of the farmer's son, because he's not able to go out. He has been injured too severely. And in the war, every other farmer's son meets his end on the battlefield. And the farmer's son is spared. And so the farmer says, "Do you see? Only time will tell." Well, the farmer, of course, wasn't a Christian. He didn't have a biblical perspective. But here's the truth. Moses here in the desert for 40 years. Can you make sense of it? Nothing seems to be happening. He's far away from the people that he cares for. How could God be at work in this? And yet, with the benefit of hindsight, Moses would have been able to see, and we can see, that the hand of God really was at work. And we can interpret this incident in its proper light. In the midst of our lives, there'll be many ups and downs. Sometimes we'll see things at the time that seem to be going well for us, but they may not actually be good for us. And other times we may wonder, say the loss of a job, some great disappointment that you may experience in your career or your life, and you may feel, "What's the point of this? How can I make sense of this? What is God doing here?" But give it time. Give it time. God works on his timetable. And our timetable is often not the same. Moses was going to be the rescuer of his people, but he acted too hastily, didn't he, here, in slaying the Egyptian. It was not God's time. But God's time would come. And God provided a refuge for him, and God was preparing him for the work that he had called him to do. The reaction of Moses to the people's oppression. But the chapter concludes, of course, on a much higher note. The reaction of God to the people's oppression. The reaction of God to the people's oppression. Three brief points. First of all, the account emphasizes once more the long duration of the oppression that God's people were suffering. The New International Version, some other versions translate slightly differently, New International Version translates it, "During that long period, the king of Egypt died." What a long time. What a long time that this oppression was going on for. It wasn't just a month or two. This went on for a long time, and even with a change of king, things did not improve immediately at all. a long time. And can't that be hard for you and I to endure? Whenever the trial that we are being subjected to in the providence of God seems to keep going on and on and on. And it's not easy to endure. We feel like crying out with the psalmist, as we may indeed do. How long, O Lord? How long, O Lord? How long are you going to allow this to keep going on? God's people were suffering oppression for a long period of time before the Lord intervened through Moses to deliver them. Added to that is this, secondly, the intense nature of the oppression. Several phrases are used here in verses 23 onward to emphasize just how hard it was. Look at the phrases. The Israelites groaned under their slavery. If you're groaning, that's painful, that's terribly oppressive. They cried out. And thirdly, their cries for help or their cries for relief from their hard labor. This was really, really tough and really, really hard for the people of Israel. Long duration of the oppression, the intense nature of the oppression, but then look at how the chapter ends. The divine reaction to the oppression. It's described in a fourfold way. Here's what God did. This is how God reacted. One, he heard their groaning. He heard their groaning. Sometimes in our experience of difficulty or trial, you and I will be led to think, no one is hearing what I am saying. No one is really hearing. I'm saying it. I'm saying what I'm struggling with and what heartache I have, but no one is really hearing me. Servants of God, though no one else may be hearing you, you can be assured that the Lord can and does hear your deepest groaning. The second thing here is not only the Lord heard, but he remembered his covenant. Here's his covenant faithfulness. Maybe sometimes you've been in the midst of some difficulty or hardship and you felt like this. Nobody really is remembering me. That shouldn't be the case, but it can happen. We can get caught up in our own lives and people who are going through hardship can really feel, there's no one who's remembering me in this situation. They've forgotten about me. That can be very hard. Dear servant of the Lord, be assured that the Lord will remember you. He's not forgotten you. Even though sometimes God's people, when having to endure things over a long period of time, have cried out, O Lord, have you forgotten us? Have you forgotten to be merciful? Here, even over this long period of time, the Lord then remembers his covenant and he's going to act on it. The third thing is this, that he looked on the Israelites. There's a later expression in the book of Exodus saying that he looked on their affliction. He saw and appreciated and had sympathy for their hardship and their affliction. He saw it. He noticed it. He didn't pass over it. He didn't notice it. He didn't take note of it. He looked on it. And sometimes perhaps you've been led to think or to say, no one really sees what's going on in my life. No one really can see it. The Lord can see all that's going on in your life. And will look with compassion on the sufferings of his covenant people. And the last phrase, he heard their groaning, he remembered his covenant, he looked on the Israelites, and the NIV translates the last phrase, he was concerned about them. The actual Hebrew word here is the common Hebrew word for to know. To know. For example, it's And I think there's a deliberate contrast here. Earlier on in the book of Exodus, it says that a king arose in Egypt who did not know Joseph. And that's where all the troubles started. This king who did not know Joseph began to oppress the people of God. But here is a covenant God who knows his people. And the sense there is that he is concerned about them. And again, sometimes you and I may feel there's no one who really knows or is concerned about me. Be assured, the covenant God is always concerned for his suffering people. The conclusion is this. Be assured, God is not unmoved by the groans and cries of his covenant people. And very soon we shall see in the book of Exodus how Moses, who had been sent away as a refugee and an exile in the land of Midian, will be called and equipped and raised up to bring into action the Lord's care and concern for his suffering people. God is not unmoved by the cries and groans of his covenant people. Verse 24 and 25. God heard their groaning, and he remembered his covenant with Abraham, with Isaac, and with Jacob. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them. Same God, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob, is the God and Father of our Lord Jesus Christ, your covenant God and Lord, who is concerned about you, even though the trial you may have to endure may go on indeed for a very long time, and you may indeed find the going tough. So God looked on the Israelites and was concerned about them.